Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Welcome, everybody. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. Wow, I'm Shireen.
Hi, I'm Anna.
We have an episode today. We have a great episode for you today. We have a wonderful conversation with the co-founder and CEO of Kerning Cultures Network, Heba Fisher. She is a lovely person doing really important work. And we talk about the network and the podcast it originated from and the reasons that the network exists and all of that. It's a cool conversation. We get personal. Then we don't. Then we do. Yep. That's all I gotta say.
All right, stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shireen. How's it going?
It's okay. It's good. It's good. I was kind of running behind today, so I'm still coming down from that stress high. But other than that, I'm excited to record and have a lovely conversation. My first conversation of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I've had the today's been the busiest day. I've already recorded. This is my fourth podcast today that I've recorded.
Oh, wow.
I know. Today, just all of a sudden, everything landed on today. I did not schedule well. But that's the way it goes.
And here we are.
You see Thursday. Usually Thursdays are my chill days. But today, not so chill.
Well, that should be a crime.
It should be a crime. It's criminal what's happening here.
It's to say the least. It's kind of exciting because I'm always excited when we have a guest on that is like familiar with podcasting. It just feels a lot easier and... not that it's never not easy, but there's just something like a kinship that I feel when we have a guest on that is also a podcaster and like into the whole world like that. Also, we were connected to her yet again by the wonderful Lauren Pacell.
Tink Media's finest.
Tink Media's finest. She's just a gem. Everyone that we get connected to from her also feels the same way. I've never heard a bad word about that woman. She's just a wonderful being. And she connected us to this guest, Heba Fisher, the co-founder and CEO of the Kerning Cultures Network. Welcome.
Thanks, ladies. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. I'm glad you're finally joining us because I feel like we have done sort of cross promo stuff in the past.
Like, I remember we did an ad for Al Empire a long time ago. And we're going to do it again in the next month or two, whenever, I guess, iHeart figures it out. And then, yeah, but I mean, we've known about you guys for a long time now. So it's funny that we're only now guesting. But as Shireen said before the podcast started, like, the pandemic was kind of a gift in a way because it took us all virtual. And now we can have people who aren't, like, in our neighborhood on the podcast, which is cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. And so I'm excited to talk to you and, of course, use this as an excuse to get to know you better. So let's just start. Let's just start from the top. Where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in the States. I was born in Washington, D.C., and we moved around a lot growing up. So I'm half Egyptian, half American. You can hear it in my name, Hiba Fisher. And when I turned 12, we moved to Jeddah in Saudi, and I did middle school in Jeddah. I did high school in Bahrain. My family moved to Dubai thereafter, and home is a pretty elusive concept till this day.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of moving. Was there any place in particular that you felt like a more of a draw to, or is it all kind of the same?
You know, it's when we moved from the States. I don't know where you guys grew up. I'd love to hear that story too.
California.
Yeah, just California.
So maybe. And I think that's kind of the purpose of the show, probably. But I feel like the U.S. kind of forces an assimilation, especially on young people. And so when we were here in my younger years, you know, I wanted to be like your typical white kid. And then when we moved to Saudi, I think that was the first time that I was proud to be Arab and, you know, really connected with where I come from, started to learn the language, actually. So I think it wasn't a so much as a particular place, so much as it was just being, I think being surrounded by other people who were more like me, that was pretty impactful as a kid.
That makes sense. I always want to know when it comes to people that are mixed or something, how did your parents meet? I feel like that's always an interesting story.
Yeah, they have a pretty epic love story, actually. So my father is like straight American from Boston, and he's always had this appetite for exploring the world. This is random, but he was one of the first Americans to get a tourist visa to go to China in the 70s, like when they opened their borders. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah. So there, he was working for a consulting firm in the U.S. and they had a project in Cairo. And I don't think anybody from his office volunteered, but he was eager to go. And he and my mom ended up meeting through friends. And actually, at the time, my mom was engaged to this like wealthy Egyptian guy. And so it was, you know, a little bit of a love triangle, whatever.
I like that.
And she said the reason that she chose my father was she felt like with this other man, she would have been, she said, the kind of wife who would have to wear makeup to bed at night. Like you'd have to, like she was a trophy wife basically for him. Whereas with my father, he, you know, wrote her poetry and they became very good friends.
Dad.
And
that sounds great.
He was a real person.
Yeah. So that's how they met.
He saw her probably as a real person as well versus just a trophy.
Yeah, exactly. And this was the 70s and, you know, marrying a non-Egyptian was a really big scandal, frankly. And so it took a really long time for them to even get, you know, acceptance to get married. And when they did, and I learned this recently, when they did get married, one of my favorite uncles actually like refused to come to the wedding and refused to talk to them for like 7 years afterwards. And, you know, now he loves us all. Cause my dad was actually Christian at the time and an American, he wasn't Egyptian. It's a whole different world now. And all of my cousins and thereafter are married to Italians and Germans and whatever.
Yeah.
But at the time, my mom was a a pretty big rebel.
Your mom had to break the mold.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that your mom's family is Muslim then.
Yes. And my father has embraced Islam since marrying my mom too. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, that's, I mean, can you elaborate on embraced Islam? I'm curious. Like what, how much of it? Like, just like, is he a practicing?
Yeah,
like,
he's a practicing Muslim. He's, cool. Which is,
that's
yeah.
That's really cool.
We got one.
Yes. We tricked him. No, that's yeah. hilarious. I know. I love that.
Yeah.
I have a very devout Muslim mother and a father who was raised in Islam, but is very secular in his beliefs. And I just, I find it very interesting when like a person, you know, who is not of, you know, the Swana region, who chooses to engage, because like mm-hmm. I think it can be, it's such a religion that's been stigmatized in a way that's, you know, the press isn't good. Yeah. You know, so like it's actually quite incredible when someone is willing to be like, I will engage with this because, you know, the love of my life, this is her life or this is his life. And I think that's very nice to see that. Mm-hmm. Unlike my dad, who was raised in it, was like, it's not for me. And I'm like, well, yeah, you spent your whole life in it, maybe. But my mom is, you know, I don't think she could live without Islam. Like, it's fully yeah. self-actualized her, you know, it's a part of who yeah. she is. And I think that's so, I think it's very beautiful when people use Islam as not a weapon, but a tool for their own sort of existence and mental health and all that. I don't know where I was going with totally. That. The point was that I really commend your father for, you know, choosing to engage with this religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. Bottom line, I think it's cool.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
We do need new marketing team, though, for just Muslim in general. You know what I mean? We have to fire our marketing team to get a new one to get a better
I think it was an unhired marketing team who did
yeah,
this.
Yeah, true. Yeah, some volunteer assholes just decided to take control.
I wouldn't say we didn't pay for this sort of publicity.
No, we didn't. If anything, they stole our money and then publicized everything. But anyway, enough of that. So, okay, your parents meet. What was the reason to move to Saudi Arabia?
Oh, my father's work. So he builds Islamic insurance companies for banks. There weren't many of those in the U.S. at the time. Mm-hmm. So he got an offer in Jeddah, and we moved. And it was awesome. Jeddah's awesome. It's a lot different now than how it was even then, but it was...
How old are you?
I was 12.
12. That's a very cuspy age.
It's a very formative
year. A lot
year.
Happens at yeah. 12.
Yeah.
So at that age, what was your... what was your grasp of both English and Arabic as languages?
We were raised in an English-speaking household. Like, my mom would yell at us in Arabic, but that was about the extent of our understanding. She would, like, put us in classes, but we all kind of rebelled. We typically just did whatever my sister, who's the eldest, wanted us to do, and she often rebelled. So I could understand a little bit, but it wasn't very good. So I started taking, you know, dedicated Arabic classes in middle school.
Awesome. That's cool. And I'm sure being immersed in just an Arab city does wonders to your language part of your brain. It just like clicks and something activates and suddenly you're thinking and dreaming in Arabic or whatever it is. So I'm really glad you had that experience. Yeah. I think it's really, I don't know. I just think language is like the coolest thing ever. So I think it's nice that as a kid you were like exposed to like these two parts of your worlds and then they combined.
What was it like for you? What was it like for you, Shireen?
You're not interviewing us. We're talking to you.
She's a pro, so she does.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not similar to you at all because we didn't move around as much as you did. But when I went to preschool and kindergarten in Syria. So I remember just like that balance of English and Arabic in my brain. and like learning something first in one and then like kind of trying to reconcile it with the other. It's just kind of funny. And then my mom has an accent. So a lot of the English I learned from her was in her accent. Mm-hmm. So do you remember Hooked on Phonics? Anyone use Hooked on Phonics? That's how me and my sister learned English. Hooked on Phonics. But yeah, I think I'm glad that you as a kid weren't like rejecting or like rebelling against even moving, because I think a lot of kids at 12 would have been like, this is my home. I don't want to move, you know?
Oh, I was. Oh, for sure. I think I cried mm-hmm. for like a week or something. But it actually ended really quickly. So I mean, I didn't want to leave my friends. This was the only place I had known. We lived in New Jersey at the time. I literally think it lasted a week after we moved to Jeddah. I met my, my best friend, and then the rest was kind of history. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I mean, moving sucks. I moved once, and it was like I was being murdered. You would think I was being murdered, the way I was acting. But I mean, so where did you spend the most amount of time,
of my life?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that you've never actually thought of it.
Yeah. I know. I was like, you know what I mean? Wait a second.
I don't know. I think it would have been New Jersey the first 12 years of
12
my
years.
Life. Yeah, I think so.
That's the longest. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Okay. Jersey to Saudi Arabia. Well, actually,
it's quite the difference.
Yeah. Well, you don't say. I want to know more about your experience in Dubai. Like, was it, I'm assuming it wasn't the Dubai it is now.
What is the Dubai now that you're referring to?
The Dubai now is on some, I don't even know, like it's like next level.
Yeah.
It's so, I mean,
it's just glitzy and glammy.
I guess it's
feels
just
very,
like leveled up in a way that I don't remember that in my youth. Like, I mean, I haven't mm-hmm. been since I was a child, but like, it's so, I don't know. It is. It's like full glamour. Like it's so ritzy. And I just am curious, like what it was like when you were living there.
It, I mean, it's a massive city. So you have a lot of everything, I would say. I think the kind of perception of Dubai that is like the glitz and the glam, that's like the easy thing to see. I think that's the most obvious about the city.
Yeah.
And
that's what they tell us. That's what they're giving us in their marketing.
I mean, that's like Dubai bling Netflix series stuff that exports out.
Oh,
but
yeah. Is there a bling version in Dubai as well?
Oh, yo. This bling is like one of the most Empire? Popular series. Yeah, you should watch Dubai Bling. It's something. But I mean, when you spend any amount of time there, you'll quickly realize I think what's so cool about Dubai is it's such an international place, and there's something like 100 and I don't know, five, I don't know however many nations there are in the world, but there's like 105 nationalities coexisting in harmony in Dubai. And you walk down the street and you'll hear like 16 different languages around you. And that, to have a place where people are living in harmony, is like pretty incredible, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can go into some of the more political pieces about it, which I don't particularly want to, but
we don't have to. No, I think Dubai is a very unique and incredible city in that way. Like, no other city is like Dubai when it comes to the integration of all those ethnicities and nationalities. I still have family over there now, but I visited Dubai in 2016 when my cousin was over there. And we drove out to Abu Dhabi, and we like kind of just like saw more of the outside areas. And like, I think just similar to any touristy kind of vibe, I think the glitz and glam and like the tallest building in the world kind of vibe, it's like the touristy, like Empire State Building, people think about. But Dubai is really, I don't know, like the more I think about it, it's like, you know how Istanbul gets a lot of credit for being like this
East and
culture
West.
Crosser?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Dubai is like kind of like that times 100, because it's not just the two East and West. It's like every direction you could imagine.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I totally agree. I think it's a beautiful place to live. There's something for everyone. I think what was so exciting about when I started a career there is that there so much to be developed and so much that hadn't mm-hmm. been done yet. It's a different space now. There's a lot that has been done. But so as an entrepreneur, it's exciting because there's a lot that you can build. And I think that yeah. that was always really, really amazing. For me personally, as Hiba, the only thing is I don't think I'm like designed for a city life. So mm-hmm. from that regard, I Dubai sometimes overwhelms me because you really have to like hustle. Like the grind is real. And like if you're not running at full speed, somebody else is running faster than you. So that's the mm-hmm. part that's just like, I don't think I'm built for a city life. Like I think right. I would die in New York City or even LA probably. But as a place to live, I mean, you have like food from all over the world. The beaches are amazing year round. You know, you can go hiking 45 minutes in any direction and you're literally in the center of the world. So anywhere you want to travel mm-hmm. is like, you know, within 4 hours. It's awesome.
It's crazy. I do want to get into all your work and everything, but I want to know how you got there. But first, we're going to take our first break. So BRB. Don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
And we're back. Okay. You mentioned that you're an entrepreneur and you clearly are very, the field that you've chosen is kind of like, you've had to build it yourself in a way. I want to know when you were growing up, like what were your interests? Like, did you imagine a future for yourself and did like what kind of job you'd be doing or like, what was little you thinking?
I think I went through different dreams. I think my first dream was like to be a teacher because I really loved my teachers. And then when I was in college, I wanted to become an economist. And then I took my first econ class and said, absolutely not.
That's such a rare desire.
Honestly, it really comes down to my teachers. I had an amazing econ teacher in high school. And then you're like, oh my God, I want to do this forever. And then when I was like after my first year of university, I became obsessed with microfinance and supporting small businesses. And so that was the first thing that I did out of college, actually, was build a microfinance and business education organization in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I went to school in the U.S. Mm. And podcasting came like 4 years after that. And I don't have a background in media. I never studied media. I've always loved writing. So I think that lends itself pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I basically studied anthropology in university. So I think that helps in terms of like interviewing people.
For sure. No, totally.
But it was a lot of like, I love podcasts. We don't have any that are telling stories from the places that I call home or featuring the people that I know. And, you know, why don't I do that?
Yeah. What was that process like then, coming from like a background that's not so media heavy? Like, what was your decision to go into podcasting like? And like, how did you build this like incredible network?
It started really slowly. So it started small as well. It was just a single show that we called Kerning Cultures. And it was very much inspired by Radiolab and This American Life and, you know, wanting to achieve that level of storytelling. And so I didn't have anybody around me to learn from. We started Kerning Cultures in Dubai in 2015, and literally nobody knew what podcasts were for like mm-hmm. the following 3 or 4 years. I'd walk into a room and be like, do you know what a podcast is? It's like online radio, you know? And so it was a lot of like online courses. There was some Creative Live sessions. There's an Alex Bloomberg class that he adapted, I think, from his Columbia Journalism School teachings. And that was like the Bible for myself and my team. And everybody who joined didn't have a background in podcasting, but they were journalists and storytellers in other media. So videographers, photographers, writers. And then we all just were really bad for the first couple of years, and like honestly just through trial and error. And you try to imitate as much as you can of the, you know, the shows that you really love. And we also were really careful to engage our audience and in like giving us feedback. So I would have mm-hmm. friends send, you know, emails and voice notes of like, hey, this is what, you know, like bullet points of like, here are ways that we think you can improve with the storytelling. But yeah, it was a lot of just, I don't know what the heck I'm doing, but we're gonna keep at it until we figure it out. And I would honestly say, like, I'm always proud of what we've built, but I don't think we've told like a really, really good story for, you know, maybe the first 4 years of our life. We've been at this now for 8. So yeah, for the first half of our life. Yeah.
It makes sense, though. You said you were bad, but I don't think you're finding your footing. I think it's a lot different. You're trying to figure out like a very changing media landscape back then as well. Like no one, it wasn't the structured. It wasn't this like networky, you know what I mean? So I'm glad you guys stuck to it because it's cool to see it grow. But what was the show that you wanted to make first? Like, what was the first kind of idea you had to be like, this is what I want to focus my energy on. I want people to listen to this. What was, like, was that like a, was there, were you really focused on the one show? Or was it more like a broad, like, I want to have like this umbrella that people can go to?
It started with one show. We didn't, our second show, which actually was El Empire, came out in 2019. I think towards the end of 2019. So it's only been like the past 3 years that we've really built into a network of, we're now up to 17 Arabic and English originals under our network.
That's so cool.
Yeah. But the first, it was honestly, it was just like, just thinking pretty small actually in the beginning. And I always wanted it to be this successful business. You know, it was, I like devoured Startup from Gimlet Media and was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to build this amazing network. We're going to get acquired by Spotify for, mm-hmm. you know, $230 million, inshallah. I think we were so focused on just how can we get a show to be successful and then we'll add more.
So it wasn't Kerning Cultures Network for a while. It was just Kerning Cultures.
Yeah, it was just Kerning Cultures. Yeah.
I remember that because I remember that was early days when you guys reached out to us. It was Kerning Cultures.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I think it's really cool that you have both Arabic and English language podcasts as well, because I think it's such a good, it's an untapped little, it's not little, it's an untapped market or like audience that you can reach. we've interviewed like some of our family members and stuff, or like a lot of my cousins only speak Arabic, or like they're more comfortable in Arabic. And so I always found that really nice to have like that closer connection on the show. But I don't know, that 17 podcasts is crazy to me. I can't even, it's just like we started with this one thing being like, we want people to feel less alone. And it's just so cool how like intricate it's gotten and how wide it's spread. I just think it's wild.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I commend you. It's a very tough thing to do. I work at a massive network and I'm like, this is impossible. We have like all this money behind us and I'm like, we can't do anything. So I commend you for working so hard to even create these stories because, you know, it's important. Like we were saying before, as Middle Easterners, we don't always have the best press. And I think it's important to tell stories like this and to create more of a viewpoint than just like what, you know, is shown on the news or, you know, it's not even what's shown on the news. Not the best. It's all very sad. I think we would hit that a lot, too, when we were talking about news on this show a lot. And we'd just be like, it can be very emotionally draining when you're constantly feeling like you're trying to create an argument as to why people should care while simultaneously like sort of draining your own empathy, if you will. Like you're just trying to like stay above water. And then we definitely hit a wall because it was like, you should care, you should care, you should care. Yeah. And then you're like, am I the only one who cares?
Yeah, and that's what it felt like for sure. Especially when it came to like personal issues like Syria and like no one really like just like it just accumulated into frustration and then it was just like fuck this. But yeah.
It became more about then just telling people's stories than trying to basically like analyze and then regurgitate like what's happening in the news in the Middle East to our audiences, because then it's like, why are we doing the work? They need to do the work.
I think mentioning it here and there is really helpful because I think some people that listen to shows like ours, it's maybe they're not that familiar with what we're talking about. So I always do think it's valuable to like spread awareness about stuff, but there has to be a balance, I guess, with any kind of marginalized community trying to survive in the world between like educating the outside and also like taking care of yourself. I have a question. So you said you went to Virginia for college?
Yes.
After being in the Middle East for a minute, was there like any kind of culture shock going back to America, or had you gone back and forth before that point?
No. Yeah, there was a little bit of a culture shock. I felt really homesick probably for the first 2 years of university. And I miss this life where it's you're on a semester schedule and then you're off for like 3 months of the summer and you can go home and that's great. So that always really helped. But it was, very homesick for the first 2 years. I had a wonderful group of friends around me, alhamdulillah, but it was hard being so far away from home. Yeah.
Did you seek out Arab friends, or did it kind of like, how did you, I just feel like getting to a college after not being in America for so long must have been kind of isolating. How did you manage to build yourself a social network?
There weren't a huge number of Arabs at University of Virginia.
That's maybe sense when you say it that way.
there were some, and you know, we were friends, but I would say my closest friends were I connected a lot with like the Muslim Student Association. And I had a pretty strong group of some Iranian friends, a lot of Pakistani friends. And we would, you know, do game nights and cook together. And yeah, it was a really nice group.
That sounds so nice and like idealistic, like what you imagine college can be like. It's cool that you had that.
Yeah.
I like that.
I wanted to say something about, you know, this idea of like the Middle East has bad press in the Western world. That's absolutely true, of course, as we know that. One of the reasons that we, have continued to build Kernan Cultures Network is also the need on the Arabic media side. So media in the Arab world is it's created for our parents' generation,
right?
And it's not totally created for the youth, and we're a predominantly young population. Over 65% of the region is under the age of 35. That's 140 Whoa. Million of us between the ages of 15 and 35, and that's why social media is so prevalent and so popular across the Arab world. We top global usage for Facebook, Snapchat, and YouTube. Like, we're insane consumers wow. of content that's actually relevant to us because it's created by other young people. And so podcasting is, you know, is this new medium in the Arab world that's really only started to pick up in the past 2 to 3 years. This was a space that we carved out for ourselves, and Kerning Cultures has been very much honestly building the market, not only in terms of the audience side and the content, but also building out the business side and like teaching brands about podcasts and this is how you advertise and all of that. And it's with this intention of like, it's so important to have media that speaks to us. You know, it's incredibly alienating when you turn on the TV or you watch films and it's all the same superficial stuff over and over. And we're trying, and I think Alhamdulillah doing really well of creating stories that actually speak to things that matter. You know, we have shows mm-hmm. about science, and we have shows about mental health, and we have shows about love, and, you know, we're trying to do a true crime series. But I want to kind of underline that idea that there's a problem on both sides of the pond in terms of the
sure.
media.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
No, it is interesting. And it also just like makes complete sense, because every time Arabic news comes on, I tune out.
Oh,
like
yeah,
I think
yeah.
it's just like, oh, that's for the adults, the real adults in the room.
Well, yeah. And you know, in my case, like in Iran, like 90% of it is propaganda. So you're like, oh,
stayed on,
what's
yeah.
the real?
Yeah.
What's the real news? You know, they're like, everyone is outside cheering for the mullahs. And you're like, are we? I don't see anyone outside. You're like, okay. Okay. I've watched some very surreal news in Iran, and everyone's like, stop watching that. And I'm like, yeah, but they can just say that.
It's like Fox Newsy.
Yeah, it is. But like worse, because it's Fox News. I mean, I guess now, yeah. But back in the day, at least they would remember their whole like fair and balanced.
Right. And it's not controlled by the government.
No.
Like, not ultimately, no. I suppose. Yeah. It's TBD. No, but it's a good point, because. And I didn't know that statistic about most of the population being under 35. That's so interesting. And really goes to show like how important it would be to access those brains and like have them be aware of things that impact them. It's not just like, yeah. So I think, I don't know. I'm just so glad you thought of that, because I never thought like Arabic news was a thing that we could tackle. I just thought it was like the set in stone, this is how it is. And that's probably pretty close-minded of me. But this is the first time as you're speaking about that, I was like, whoa, I would watch something and learn something better if I didn't associate it with this divide. Like, oh, this is not for me. Not even because I'm not like completely like in Syria, but because of the age. It's just so interesting. It's like my grandfather's thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's so cool. Can I ask where you're currently living? And I apologize if you already said.
No, I didn't say. So I'm between Seattle and Dubai. So my family and business are in Dubai. So I go back and forth, probably split my time between the two.
Wow. Where are you currently?
I'm in Seattle currently, where the weather is glorious.
I do think that no one's ever said, I'm in Seattle, the weather is great. Like, I don't think that sentence has existed yet in our world. You know how everyone says we recycle things? Not that one. That one's brand new. But it's cool that you divide your time between the two. I think that's like, honestly, a dream for like, at least for me, or like, I think for a lot of people that want to have a connection still to a part of them that's like always going to like, hurt and be tight. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, it does. For me, it's easy, because I kind of go between two homes. So if it was, I don't know, if I picked a place where I had to like go and stay at a hotel, like no way. But it's so easy. I just slip into, you know, my parents' home, or I go to my siblings, and it's it's easy to do the back and forth. And yeah. I think it's an amazing way to try to orchestrate your life based on which city has a preferable climate. So when the weather sucks here, it's really great to go to Dubai and vice
versa.
That's
a good point. Yeah. It's good to pick two homes that are not on the same line on the equator, you know?
Yeah.
A little space gives you some variety. Yeah. Is most of your family now in Dubai then?
Yeah. My siblings, my parents. So it's... all of our extended family is in Egypt, but the nuclear family is there.
That's cool. Wow. That is nice to have a home in both. I think it's, yeah. I apologize for going back in time, but I want to talk about, so you move when you're 12, you're half white. How are you thinking about that side of your family? Like, what's your relationship like with your dad's side of the family? Like, does it feel... I'm just curious about how either he maintained contact with them or like how you viewed that part of you when you were growing up in Saudi Arabia.
So everything I know about family and love comes from my mom's side of the family, actually. We're not, unfortunately, we're not very close to my dad's side of the family for no like grand reason. It's just that's how things always were, which is really sad to me. And so moving to Jeddah meant we were a lot closer to Egypt, and cousins and uncles and aunts can come and we could go really easily. And that was a beautiful, I went to an American international school in Jeddah. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the first time that I was surrounded by kids who were like me, you know, this like ethnically ambiguous, you know, mixed kids from a lot of different places. Maybe they were Americans who had moved to Saudi, or they're Arabs and, you know, or Saudi and going to an American school. Like you have a little bit of both kind of thing. It was, yeah, I think like all of my classmates were these sort of globalized citizens. I remember, like, I don't know, this is my own, I have this conversation a lot with my husband about like where we want to raise our kids and, and all this. And my thinking is like, I definitely don't want them to go to primary school in the US, because I really think, like, I remember growing up and the kids are mean, like they're really mean if you're not like them. And then you go somewhere like Jeddah where everybody's different and everyone is just so kind and so welcoming. And yeah, it was, alhamdulillah, it was a beautiful, beautiful childhood, really.
I'm so happy for you. Because, yeah, it was hard growing up in a public, like, you know, it was, yeah. I hated it. And bullying happens. And I felt like a fucking freak all the time. Especially, like, if you have an accent or something, like, they wanted to put me in ESL. And I was just like, oh, no. But anyway, I want to ask you so many more questions. But first, let's take our second break. Yeah, don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota. Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating
Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
We are back with Heba. Can you, I've always had this thought, but can you kind of explain what the word kerning means? Is that a crazy question? I'm sorry. I've always seen that word, but I don't really fully understand what it means.
It is not a crazy question. It's probably a poor choice for a name of a company. So because nobody knows what it means, poor or genius, I haven't quite decided yet. So kerning is a process in typography. It's the sizing of spaces between letters mm-hmm. so that you can read the word more clearly. And so it's more aesthetically pleasing to look at. So the name is a metaphor. It's the spaces in between cultures through the stories that we tell. Oh,
that's what I was wondering, the origin of the inspiration, because I know what kerning meant. Like, I know the typography origin, but I was like, maybe it means something different. But no, that meaning makes sense now.
Yeah, I'm looking at images of kerning.
Yeah, how did you guys land on that that name?
Oh, I didn't come up with it. That's like way, I think, above above my creative abilities. A friend in advertising came up with the name. And it's still so, I think, true to like the fiber of who we are as a team and what we do. And I don't just mean in terms of like, you know, this kind of straddling East and West with telling English stories, you know, about the Arab world, not just about that. We only actually have three of the 17 shows in our network are in English. But even within our Arabic shows, it's a case of, you guys probably experienced this, but like in the Middle East, we don't actually know each other, right? Like, you know your country, you know your community. But as Egyptians, you don't really know what it means to be Lebanese. You don't really know what it means to be Syrian. And we kind of stick to our own a little bit. And so there's this lofty vision at Kerning Cultures that by telling stories, you know, when you listen to an episode from Bihob or from Jasadi or from any one of our shows, you're hearing voices from literally all across the region, from Sudan, from Palestine, from Morocco. And you don't really get exposed to that in typical media. And so that's part of the vision and the mission of what we're doing is bringing each other closer together through these stories.
I love that. That's so true too. I never really examined that, like, because there is so much pride in all those nationalities, and it's like warranted, obviously, but it is pretty like an isolating kind of pride, if that makes sense. It doesn't really allow for even if you know someone who's a different nationality, it still feels kind of isolated. So I like that you said that. It's interesting because for whatever reason, Syrians in particular are hard to come by. Like, I meet a lot of Lebanese people. I meet a lot of Iranians. I meet a lot of, I don't meet a lot of people from Saudi Arabia, to be frank. So I feel like Syrians are hard to come by. And I, growing up in San Diego, there were a lot of just like different nationalities and whatever. But you're right. When it came to my extended family, there is like this, my dad especially is obsessed that he's from Damascus. That's like his entire identity is being from that city. So yeah, you make a good point. And I like that intention with your shows to share it in a more accessible way. And like, I don't think people are aware of that isolation even. It's not on purpose. It's just their version of pride.
I also think like sort of regionality is important because, I mean, I'm just using Iran as an example. I'm not as clear what it's like in Arab countries, but in Iran, like the regions matter. The regions are who you are. Like my dad's from Northern Iran. He's like, I'm a Torx, I'm not a farce, you know? And my mom's from like Shiraz, and she's like, I'm an authentic farce because I'm from Shiraz, you know? Even though she was born and raised in Tehran, right. But she's like, my bloodline is an authentic farce. Like, I'm an actual Iranian farce. Versus my dad's like, I'm an Iranian Torx. And so you're like, right. But then it's like completely, they speak different languages. They don't all just speak Farsi. It's like regionally, like it's important. Like I would say my dad being a Torx defines him so wholeheartedly because of it's everything in who he is, like of what you would think a Torx is. Or if you're familiar with what the Torx is, you know, he's loud, he's fun, he's crazy. He likes to get into it. He's a little nutty. And when you say anything, he's like, yeah, because I'm a Torx. And my mom would be like, they said, never marry a Torx. Here I am. Look at my life. He's driving me crazy, you know, while he like dances behind her like Zoom meetings at work, you know. And she's like, I married a Torx. They told me not to. It's my own fault, you know. And so that I think it's like that is so important. And a lot of people don't realize it. They're just like, you're Iranian. And it's
that's
like
a really good point.
It's so much more complicated than that. No, I'm not just Iranian.
That's a really
Iranian.
Good point. That's a really good point. Because even in Syria, my mom is from a town like 2.5 hours max from Damascus. And my dad treats her like she's like a country bumpkin person. Yeah, like her entire family are these like country folk. And it's so silly. It's so close together. And even like Homs and all these cities in Syria, they have different words for different foods sometimes. Like there's still some little differences and it's city to city in the same country. So I can only imagine like how that extends in other places. That's interesting. Yeah,
I think it's very interesting. And it's important to like sort of break down these differences to like, you know, lessen the, you know, generalization of all of us as like one person or one culture. Thus is our lives. Thus is our battle.
This is the cross. This is the our cross to bear. No, but when you were talking about your dad's family, I was thinking about how people always find it strange. I don't know if you have the same experience, but how close I am with my family. I feel like people in America are so like confounded to be like, why do you always visit your parents? Or like, why are you so close to your mom? Or like whatever it is. And I never thought of it that as a strange thing until I realized how uncommon it was in a lot of like, specifically like white American culture. Sometimes it's distant. Like some, it's not always distant, obviously, but it's interesting how that is valued from one culture to the next. And I'm really glad that you experience the family on your mother's side, because that is family, you know, like that's the whole, I feel like the community revolves around family. It's not like individualistic like it is in America. It's more community based. I was thinking about that and how, has anyone ever told that to you? Just like, Has anyone ever been confused about your relationship with your family? Because I always get that.
I haven't gotten that actually. But I will say that was my belief is like, oh, it's just because they're American and they don't. But I've in you know life have met some like very white American people who have become very dear friends, and they're very close within their family. So I think it's not like a rule.
No, it's definitely not. It's not a generalized thing. And like my brother-in-law is from Indiana, and his family, their family's obsessed with each other. Like there's definitely, and growing up, like I couldn't go to grandma's house. Like I never was close to my grandma in that way. I feel like that's also a different kind of relationship in America. But no, it's definitely not general, but maybe just like the people that I know now, they're just more distant with their parents in particular, I guess. But yeah, no, it's a good point. I don't mean to generalize.
Yeah.
You look like you're really thinking.
I'm always thinking. I'm like the worst podcaster because I think in real time. And then our poor editor has to go in and like clean up all my,
There are moments where I thought Anna was frozen.
There is like, that not, is a not, thing not today, that's been said but to it is me before. Thing. Sometimes I'll sit very, and then I'll be thinking, but like, I won't realize how still I'm being. I'll just be like, you know, deep in thought, and then people will be like, "Are you there?" And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I am."
It happened a couple times, kind of recently, and I It's so funny when it happens, but
I'm sorry. It is better to podcast with me in person because then I feel more alive versus when I'm like really thinking about what people are saying.
I
compartmentalize a lot of my feelings towards these sorts of stories and stuff and like my own experience because, you know, with most child of immigrants, I have a lot of sort of feelings about certain things, positive and negative. And then I come on this podcast and I like talk to people like you, Heba, and I'm like really start thinking about certain things. And then I'm like slowly collapsing in on my own sort of emotional like roller coaster that is my like mental, you know.
Right.
Anyway, that's just one of those things. Sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I've never thought about that like that. Oh my God.
And I just see like you're spiraling.
I just start thinking about certain things and then I'm like, I should call my dad. But yeah, I mean, I feel like sometimes I do feel like I'm very close to my family, but like my family and I were very much like don't bother me types. So like none of us bother each other. Like to bother my mom is to, you're really asking to bother. My mom will be like, what do you need? But like it's like an incredibly loving, giving mother. Like I can ask my mom for anything, but just like don't bother her too much, you know? And I'm the same way. I'm like, don't bother me. I'm fully like, don't, what do you need? You know? And, but I don't know. I think there's something funny in that because it's like, all of us are the same, but we're actually like very incredibly close, but we don't talk like every day. We simply just text. Oh, we like text each other. We'll just be like, what's going on? Okay, cool. Talk to you in 2 days. And it's very like, I don't visit very often, but like, I don't feel like there's a lack of closeness there. Like, I feel like I'm very close to my family, but we are all so similar in the way that we're like, I'm doing my own thing right now. Like my mom, oh my God. If my mom goes into her walk-in closet and closes the door, you do not go in there.
Is she podcasting?
That's a good room to do it
in. You know what she's doing. She's praying. She's praying. She's reading the Quran. You just don't go in. You don't bother her. And if like you're like, mom, and she's not answering, and then you look in her room and that the closet door is closed and the light's on underneath, you got to come back.
You run.
That's like a little sign that's like, BRB, be back in at this time. That's when you know, you're like, I can't bother her right now. Yeah. You know, when you hear the, you know, like the Rahman, Rahim, you're like, okay, I'll be over here. I'll be in the other room and I will wait until her office has opened. But it's very much like that's, I know immediately. I'm like, everyone in the family's like, the closet door is closed. She's like either, and my mom also runs a bunch of like Quran studies in the Bay Area. So she'll be like on Skype or like on Zoom, like with all her ladies doing Quran studies. So like when you see her and she has like her headphones in, you're like,
she means business.
She's busy. She's running like a massive group of women, you know, doing Quran study. So I know. But I think, you know, we're also very close. It's very interesting. I don't know. Dynamics are very interesting like that. That's what I was thinking about this whole time when I started to physically freeze. I was like, am I close to my mom? I do consider myself close to my mom.
Yeah. There is kind of a surface level element to it, at least not generally, but sometimes only because there's not a lot of emotional inquiry. At least for me, we don't really, I wasn't raised to understand how I feel or express how I feel. So I do think there's kind of a surface level closeness involved in that. But I think our generation is helping break that tendency. I think our generation will definitely assist in that emotional intelligence being fostered. Like we talk about therapy, we talk about how we feel. And even that is like revolutionary, I think, with certain aspects of our cultures, or it can be. So I'm excited about the future generations and how it might evolve, you know, because that's how change happens. It has to start with a generation that's like, actually, let's change it. And that's how you address like generational trauma. It's how you address so many things. It's just, it happens step by step.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we wrap up, what's your day-to-day like? Like, what are you focusing on at the moment?
With Kerning Cultures, we have a slate of new shows in the pipeline that we're really excited about. We're working on our first true crime series, ooh, which I'm super excited about. It's called Lebanon Heist. We're going to do two shows, one in Arabic, one in English, looking at the one of the most outrageous mass robberies in recent history, which was the robbing of billions of dollars of Lebanese citizens' money from their bank accounts by the central bank.
Whoa.
And doing like a 6-part series about that, which I'm really excited. And recently, in the past year and a half, we've started adapting our IP to TV and film. So we just optioned our first series, which I'm thrilled about. And this idea of these stories having additional lives, mm-hmm, beyond just the podcast is really exciting. And so that's a huge focus, is just constantly pitching and having conversations with other media companies, with streaming platforms, with production houses, of like, these are amazing stories, and you know, let's put this on the big screen.
Yeah. I really hope that we get to see the seed of your, like, some podcast or like your network evolve into something that we can all watch and like share and everything. I think it's, yeah, also just makes the message so much more accessible. You know, it's really exciting. That's so cool. I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited for these shows to listen to.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want to tell the listeners where they can follow you and your network, or anything else you want them to be tuned in?
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. You guys are awesome. So Kerning Cultures network, you can check out our shows, and we have a couple in English and a bunch in Arabic. You could search Kerning Cultures, Kerning with a K. And there's a little something for everyone, whatever your interests might be. And our English series, you know, they've aired on This American Life, Radiolab, 99% Invisible, Gimlet Media. So really best in class storytelling in both languages, whichever one you want to listen in.
That's so cool. We didn't even get into all the accolades you've gotten, or like the all that. Next time we're gonna have to just like praise you for an hour. Everyone should go follow Kerning Cultures and keep up with their work. Stay tuned for those incredible shows you mentioned, because it's so fucking cool sounding. And yeah, thank you again for being on our show. But yeah, I'll wrap us out of here.
Okay.
Without further ado. Okay. Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnia on Twitter and at Selling Hosnia on Instagram.
And you have a Substack, Selling Hosnia, which is great.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all. That's all, folks. Go follow Kerning Cultures. Support the work. It's really important. And yeah, that's your homework for the day. Goodbye.
Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.